So I'd like to welcome you guys. We're rolling through these learning events pretty quickly. I'm quite surprised that we're already on RM103. And Melanie, I can see your video now. So got it figured out. So that's great. So I'd like to welcome everyone to our first conference call for RM103 Understand Legal Risk. Probably one of the learning events you've all been waiting for. And I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call this week from the traditional territory of the Kwinana Dun First Nation and Tonkawa Council. And as you can tell from the number 3 in RM103, it's the third learning event in a 3-event risk management series. So the 3 risk management learning events were developed, I just want to let you know, by an expert in the field called Dr. Ian McGregor. He's kind of retired now, though. But we worked with him to make sure that we're getting correct and accurate information. So in this learning event, keep in mind it's actually 4 weeks long. So we have 4 weeks for this learning event, and then you have an extra 2 weeks at the end to finish up. But the way I have this learning event designed is that the very last conference call is actually your required learning activity. So if you participate in the last conference call, you'll be done within the time frame. So just scroll down when you get a chance. Make sure you're available for that call, because if you're not, then I need to give you something different to do. So in this learning event, we're going to learn to recognize what legal risk is in our community recreation settings. We're going to dig into the concepts of negligence and liability, which are kind of big words, and so we'll try and work through them so they're a bit easier to understand. And we're also going to look at some strategies that can reduce or transfer the legal risk. So just before we begin, I do need to have a bit of a disclaimer and bring your attention to the fact that the rules, the regulations, constitutional provisions, legislation, and judicial opinions on matters of legal risk vary, so they're different from one jurisdiction to the next. So the way it is in Manitoba might be different to Nunavut, might be different to the Yukon. So I am not a lawyer by any means. So I'm presenting and sharing with you some of the understanding and knowledge. But if you have specific matters or questions that are legal in nature, then you really have to consult with somebody who has that expertise in your own jurisdiction. So I just kind of add that disclaimer. So I'll let you know if there's a question I can't answer or one that you have to find an answer to locally for you. So on today's call, we're going to do a really quick round of introductions because I think you're all getting to know each other. And then we're going to review the content in slides 8 to 19. And I've uploaded the file, so I might be able to present it and share it while we're going through that. So hopefully that works. And then we're going to talk about things like what is reasonable behavior for recreation leaders. So, hi, Julianne. I see that you just joined the call.
Hi, Karen.
That we're just getting started, so welcome. So you just jumped on in time for introductions. So for today's introductions, I'm just going to start with how I see you on your screen. And just really, I'll say your name, and again, if you just say it's your role and your community or your organization, we don't need anything else today because I've got lots of other questions for you to join in on. And if you're not able to talk just due to either your connection or anything like that, you can pop it in the chat if you'd like to. So we're going to go from Raquel to Igor to Nathan. That's the order I sort of see it on my screen. So Raquel, quick introduction, name, position, organization, community.
Yeah, my name is Raquel. I am the executive director from Elder Access in Whitecliff. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. And over to you, Igor, and then we'll go Nathan and Melanie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Igor, and I'm in Chilita, Northwest Territories, and I'm the director here.
That's great. Thanks. Welcome again, Igor. And over to Nathan, then Melanie, and then Nikki. And Nikki, if you want to pop in the chat, you can too. Nathan, you'll just have to unmute. Oh, I'll unmute you. There you go. Gotcha.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Hi, my name's Nathan Ananote. I'm the recreation coordinator for Baker Lake.
That's great. And Nathan is heading to Iqaluit this week, quite a trip, but to receive the Recreation Coordinator of the Year Award, is that correct?
Yeah. Been sending a bunch of kids out. I've been sending like 20 kids out all in the last 18 months, so a lot of people, well, mostly parents, love me right now, so.
Oh, you set their kids out for trips. Way to get their parents to like you. Thanks, Nathan. We'll go Melanie, then Nikki, and then Gia.
Yeah.
You want me to try unmuting you? Oh, try again. Try the space bar, it might work on your keyboard. Nope. Okay, I'll let you figure it out and we'll come back to you. Okay, over to Nikki. Did you want to introduce yourself, Nikki?
Nikki Harkin, I'm the recreation coordinator for City of Flintstone. And this is Loki. He's pathetic. He can't leave me alone when I'm sick.
Aww, that's so sweet. Thanks, Nikki. Thanks for joining us. Okay, so we'll go Pierre, and then Kumanoptik and Juliana, and I'll come back to Melanie.
Hey everyone, my name is Gian. I'm the coach for CoachUCon. I'm based here in Whitehorse. Thank you.
Thanks, Gian. And over to Kumanoptik. Do you want to use your phone? Yeah.
Oh, yes, I'll use my phone. My name is Kumanoptik Amitriel, and I am the new acting director for the recreation in Iqaluit for the municipality of Iqaluit.
That's great. And are you heading with Nathan to Iqaluit too? Sounds good. Thanks. And over to you, Juliana.
Hi, my name is Juliana, and I'm supporting the recreation department in Cambridge Bay with the designing, planning, execution of the recreational programs and cultural activities.
That's great. Thanks, Juliana. And Melanie, I see it's still not working for you to join. I wonder if you turn off your video, if it'll let you unmute. I'm not sure. Okay, so you can't find your microphone. You know what you could do? If you have your phone handy, you could do what Kumanoptik has done. So he's joined by phone and that. So I can pop the phone number in the chat and you can just try calling it if you want to. It's a toll-free number. So that way you can use the phone for audio and the computer to see what's going on. So there's the phone number and access code. So go ahead and do that if you'd like. So Melanie's in Watson Lake and she's the recreation manager or director. I'm not sure what the title is. So. That's great. Thanks, everybody. It's great to have a big group because this is a pretty important learning event. So we're going to start to go through some of the content. I'm going to try and see if this works sharing my screen. I might have to unshare it to see where everybody's at because it kind of just makes you all disappear when I share my screen. And we're going to talk through a few of the slides. As we go through, I'm going to have some questions for you. But instead of having everybody answer the same question, I'll ask just the first three people to answer, then I'll go to the next three. And you're welcome to pass if you don't have an answer and it'll just bump it down the line. Or you can pop something in the chat if it's not your turn to answer and something comes to mind, put it in the chat so we can share it. So that's how we're going to try this first little round. So Melanie, you might be able to because you've got your video on your phone. Maybe just turn the video off your phone and I can see that you've got sound on there. Yep, I can hear you. I'm just going to mute you so that we can keep going, but I can hear you now. There we go. Okay, so here is the slides that we're going to use. I'm going to try a slightly different format and see how this goes. Ah, very good. Okay, I uploaded the document, so I thought this might work a little bit better than sharing my screen each time. So we're going to go down to we're going to start with slide number 8. So slide number 8, not sure if I can do that. Sorry, it shows you the slide. Do you guys see the slides as well as the main slides, like the ones down the side? I think so. Okay. Anyway, that's all right. We'll just... Okay. So on slide 8, it actually is a slide that you will have seen in the other risk management learning events. And it's first introduced in RM101 that some of you will have taken, but not everybody. And what it does is it reminds us that there's 5 different key areas that we need to look at risk. So they're the areas that have been found to pose risks when we volunteer or work in recreation. And as you might know, there's no way to really safely and effectively get rid of every single risk. That's impossible. But if we approach risk management in a sort of systematic or disciplined way, it helps us to make sure that we don't miss any of these key areas. So the next slide, slide 9, helps you understand that there's 4 different ways to manage risk. And as you can see here, you can avoid risk. Well, we can reduce risk, which is what we talk about in RM101. And what we talked about in documentation. You can transfer risk, you can accept risk, or you can avoid risk. So I have a question for the first 3 people on my screen, sorry, which was, I'll have to maybe stop. I think it was Raquel and then Igor and then Nathan, if I'm not correct, or if I am correct. So here's my question. Do you have an example, and again, pop this in the chat if you want to, but do you have an example of how you can avoid or reduce risk? So I'll give you an example, and then think about seeing if you, let's see if we can add a couple more examples. So if you want to pass on the question, you're welcome to. I'm just going to go around until we've got about 3 different examples. So here's my example, while Raquel, while you think of yours. A program that's scheduled to run outdoors is canceled because it's minus 40 with a wind chill. And so then we cancel it, which is an example of avoiding risk. So we avoid risk because we canceled it. But if we choose to take that program and run it inside instead of still holding it outside, so we move it indoors, that's an example of reducing risk. So Raquel, I'm wondering if you have another example that comes to mind. It doesn't have to be both like mine, but one of either avoiding or of reducing risk.
Our insurance policy doesn't covers only the employees of Elder Active if something happens, right? So we have contractors, and they're not covered by our insurance. So to reduce the risk, we ask these contractors, mainly teachers that are teaching the classes of yoga, Pilates, or that are guiding hikes, we ask them to have a liability insurance for themselves.
Great, so that's an example of you guys transferring risk to somebody else. Correct?
Yes, correct.
That's great, thanks. Sorry, it's hard for me to see everybody on the screen when I'm also sharing the screen. Igor, do you want to take a shot at this one? What do you think, do you have an example of how you either avoid or reduce risk?
So I would say if we are having a tournament here in Chilita during summer and the weather is so hot, plus 40 degrees or even around that, And also, we can cancel the events. It will be unfortunate for the participants, but we can cancel the party. We can reduce a lot of tents, using many water, a lot of water, and try to go through it.
That's great. So that's an example of it's outdoors, right, and heat-related. So cancel would be avoid it. And reduce it would be to provide things and maybe not play like in the midst of the afternoon, maybe start earlier as well. Thanks, good example. Let's see if we can get one more example and if anyone else wants to pop theirs in the chat. Nathan, do you, not to put you on the spot, but do you have any thoughts about how you might either avoid or reduce risk? And I'll just unmute you.
Thank you. Well, like, I know all my custodians, we are in a very old building, so it's always tricky to keep the doors open, because if there's problems with the washrooms, we have to shut it down. If there's problems with the sewage, we have to shut it down, right? So, all our guys, to keep our building open all the time, we always have to do inspections, spot checks, make sure all the fire doors are open. There's no fuel leak, because we've been having fuel leaks a lot. Last summer has been very difficult. We lost more than 1,000 gallons. We've been having mechanical issues, so we have to keep checking the building every 8 hours just to make sure, even when we're closed. So, and not to mention all my youth leaders, they check all the indoor playgrounds, wipe everything down, you know, COVID clean. Like, there's always little kids spitting or making a mess. So, have to be really clean all the time. So,
that's a really good example, though. So, you have probably stricter policies around your facility and facility checks than what somebody else might, in order to reduce the risk through the potential that something might go wrong. So, good example. Thank you. Those are great examples. So, examples of programs, examples of people that you use to run your program, and examples of facilities. And Deanne popped in there sort of also having really clear policies and the use of facility policies in place too. So those are really great ways to reduce and to avoid risk. So if we take a look at, if we think about RM103, and you can see this on the slide that's still up, RM103 is only going to focus on ways to transfer risk. So just know that there's ways, accepting risk is pretty simple. You just run it as it is and you know there's risks. And you keep your fingers crossed. Reducing risk means changing things, and avoiding means usually canceling or not running something. But let's talk about transferring risks. And Raquel started us in that direction, that conversation, by talking about using a contractor who has liability insurance to deliver your program. So that's an example of transferring risk. So on slide 10, which I'll just change to right here, and you might have remembered this conversation from our last learning event, there's two types of risk, inherent risk and legal risk. And we've talked a lot about inherent risk in our other learning event, RM102, and for those of you guys who took RM101, you would have talked about it there. So remember that inherent risk is something that's normal or natural to an activity, and we can't get rid of that inherent risk without changing the activity itself. So I'm just going to ask the next three people, and again, if it works for you, that's great. If not, you can pass. To give an example of an inherent risk, so the next three I have are Melanie, Nikki, and Kumanopic, and anyone else is more than welcome to pop in the chat. So let me put the question in first, and I'll give you an example while you're thinking of your answer. So Melanie, you'll be up first, then Nikki, then Kumanopic. So an example for me for inherent risk is that if I go out on the trails and they're slippery, there's a risk that I might slip on the ice and hurt myself. So that's one example of an inherent risk. I know that the weather is slippery. Guillaume put an injury as part of a game, and so the potential for injury when it's part of playing a game is an inherent risk. Melanie, do you have another example?
Hello?
Hi, I can hear you.
Okay, good, perfect. So I was actually thinking about hockey, and there is the inherent risk of falling on the ice, as you just said, in the outdoors. But then there's also, in regards to hockey, that, you know, you use sticks and pucks, and they can fly pretty fast. And so there is also the risk of injury in regards of flying pucks in a sport like, or activity like, hockey.
So, exactly. And that's a part of the inherent risk. And then we put some things in place to reduce that risk. And a good example, and we'll actually be looking at some cases around hockey. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Nikki, any thoughts from you about, I'm just going to shut my door because the dog is barking. Sorry about that. Nikki, do you have any thoughts about, for an example of inherent risk?
Deanne kind of took my first thought, was if we have a lot of kids programs, kids sports, drop-in sports, and there's always the risk of injury during those games or our day camps. The next I thought was we also have a hobby shop within my building. So we have, like, shop tools, water domes, like, people accept that if they're going to use them, that there is the risk of injury with those as well.
Yeah, that's a good example, because sometimes we think about injury related to playing a game or doing a sport or something like that, but it's also, there's a lot more to recreation than that. So thank you for sharing those examples. Kumanovic, I'm wondering if you have an example of inherent risk that you'd like to share. And you might be muted, I'm just trying to see you there. Oh, I think I
see you. It says, that day around April, we host a special event down on the ice to host games like race, the building, running race, and traditional games, etc. So throughout the week, we post on Facebook to let the community know how to dress accordingly, because it is usually really cold.
Yeah, so that's a good example of an inherent risk. You run things outdoors. People live there. They know that it's going to be cold, but you reduce your risk by reminding them. So somebody can't say, well, I wasn't dressed appropriately and I got frostbite. You say, well, we reminded you. And that's part of the risk of taking part. So those are some great examples of inherent risk. So let's move on now to thinking about legal risk. So the other thing that's on this slide, and now we're going to focus on legal risk for the rest of this learning event. So legal risk, and I'm actually going to just pop this little line into the chat so that you can read it as well as hear it. So legal risk is the risk, it's the chance of a lawsuit or being sued. And probably it's one of the scariest things that people worry about is having a lawsuit or being sued, or, you know, having to pay a lot of money. Those are the types of things that we hear about in the news. Hopefully nobody's experienced them. Legal risk is concerned with the risks that are not part of the activity. So it's not about inherent risk. It's about things that somebody who goes to take part, like in hockey, they go to take part in hockey, they know that they might get hit by a stick or a puck or by another player. But they don't assume that your ice is going to be in such bad condition that their skate gets stuck and they hurt themselves. Or they don't assume that you're in a swimming pool and the diving board, they go up on it and it falls down as they're on it or something like that. Or they don't assume that they go use a playground and the swing is broken and it's not obvious and their child hurts themselves. So legal risk is about the things that people don't kind of expect to happen, so not inherent risk. Hopefully this makes sense. If you want me to stop and explain something again, just to pop a hand up or pop in the chat. So
can you give us another example
of legal risk?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll jump into a few examples. I've got some coming up that I think will help you understand, because I just want to explain it a little bit, and then let's see if there's any more questions around it. So because legal risk is concerned with risks that aren't part of the activity, we often think about negligence or negligent behavior. And we're going to look at that in a few minutes. And that is one example of a risk that people participating in the program don't expect to happen. They don't expect the instructor teaching a sport program or a skill development program to leave and leave you on your own to do it. They don't expect you to teach them something that isn't part of what they think they're going to learn. So some of the other examples of negligence, one example, think of this, is improper coaching or instruction. Okay, so I'll pop some of these in the chat as we go as well. Although I might have them on the next slide. Let me just see if I have the slide up. Oh, there we go. that's not really the slide. That's the slide about legal terms. Let's see. Okay, so here we go. So negligence and liability. So one example of negligence is improper coaching or instruction. So not doing it the way you're supposed to do it. Another one that's kind of interesting that those of you in sport might be familiar with is improper injury diagnosis. So you may have heard a lot about concussions and concussion protocols and things like that. If somebody doesn't recognize a concussion, or if they send somebody back to play before they're ready to go back to play, that would be an improper injury diagnosis. Another thing, and Nathan just told us exactly about this, so facilities that are not well maintained are also a form of negligence. So you might have heard Nathan's explanation about fuel spills and things like that. So they have to ramp up what they're doing so they're not considered negligent, because if something did happen and you didn't shut that down, then that would be a problem as well. So you can think of negligence and liability. Negligence is not being careful enough. It's the failure to exercise a reasonable degree of care under the circumstances, or a failure to take reasonable steps to prevent damage or injury. Okay? I just want to go back one slide to the point here. So I just wanted to point out that this learning event has a glossary of legal terms. So I call it the RM103 Legal Risk Glossary. And it's linked at the top of the learning event, just below where you find the presentation. So if you need definitions or you're not sure what a word means, use the glossary to find it. I've tried to make sure it's fairly simple and straightforward in there. So I'm just going to help you understand a little bit more about negligence. Let me give you a couple of examples, and then we'll come back to this slide right here. So here's an example, and hopefully this might answer the question about can you give me some more examples. Okay, so this is a true case, and I've also shared there's a link at the bottom of the Explore More section if you want any more examples of true cases. It's kind of cool. It's the I'll tell you what the name is later. I've got it written down somewhere. But so this happened in Ontario, and an assistant judo instructor was asked to lead or supervise the practice. So the main instructor, or the main, I'm not sure what they're called in judo, but the main person left. When practice was finished, so maybe it finished at 5 o'clock, the assistant left the facility without making sure that all the activity had ended. So people were still doing stuff when the assistant left. He's like, time's up, I'm out of here. So several participants continued to practice without the supervision that they needed. So they were doing their practice without that type of supervision. One person got injured and became a quadriplegic. The organization itself and the instructor were found to be negligent. So that's two things. So the organization was responsible for making sure the instructor concluded or ended practice properly, and the instructor shouldn't have left while people were still practicing. So that went to court, and they were found to be negligent. Here's another example, and then I'm just going to open it up to questions. So there was a lunch at a golf club. This is somewhere in Canada. Alcohol was served during lunch, and then people left, and three people were killed in the motor vehicle accident. And when they investigated it, they found that the number of drinks that were consumed were part of the factor that caused, they contributed to the motor vehicle accident. And so the golf club was found negligent. They're the ones who served the drinks. And so they were found negligent. So those are a couple of examples of what negligence is. I'm just going to stop sharing because then I can see everybody. And I see Nisha's joined, so thanks, Nisha. Does anyone have any questions so far? Because this is a lot of information. Okay, I see some thumbs up. I see some no, I'm okay. So keep going. Okay, when we get to our next question, we'll have Deanne, Juliana, and Nisha answer the next question.
I have a question. Yeah, go ahead. I have two questions. So one, when we held a baseball tournament in CarMax over the summer, there was someone who got clocked in the head, and that was my first time dealing with something like that. So he fell down. He didn't want to see a nurse, but then he wanted to continue playing. And so, we let him. Would that be enough care in that situation, or would we have to say no, you need to actually see a specialist until we allow you to come back in the game?
Does anyone else want to try answering that? I know how I would answer it. Go ahead, Gia.
So there are two factors. So there is so we need to talk about the safety first, right? What are the safety concerns we need to talk about? The second thing is we're getting back into the court, and if you're not sure if it's a concussion or it's a head injury or whatever, even the parents ask you, okay, can my kid go back to the sport? Doesn't matter. He needs to get the permission from the doctor, and then only we can allow him back to the sports or to the participation.
Okay. Yeah, I think if somebody's actually being hit that hard in the head that they land on the ground, I would not be comfortable with them continuing playing.
When I had suggested, we really need to go see a nurse, and then you wouldn't want to go, and then so I called the nurse, and I was like, hey, can you come on site? And that's how I learned, next time if we were to do a baseball tournament, I'd like to have, a nurse on site. Yeah, the nurse says that, if she'll come and check, but it's up to the individual, and if they're refusing health services, then there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. Igor, go ahead. Do you want to jump in on that?
I would say this is the reason for medical staff from the rent at some sports activities, because anything could happen, and as the best thing to go with.
Exactly. It's nice to have at least the first day. People can refuse service, but you can refuse to have them continue playing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's your event. Kumanopic just posted it, and then I'll come back to Deanne. This is a really good question, Kumanopic. So you were never told that your AED was outdated, and when you first started working there, the pads had expired. Yeah, pads for AEDs expire, and batteries run out for sure. So when you brought it out, it wasn't updated, and the equipment was expired, so you got them to order one. So that's a good example. I don't think that would necessarily be negligence, because the rules about AEDs aren't the same across Canada as the rules about first aid kits and being able to provide first aid. So if you look on, like and I'm a Red Cross instructor trainer, so I can answer the question about AEDs. And I was just looking it up from a workplace safety perspective. It's up to an organization to decide if they want to have an AED or not. So I don't think it would be negligence that it wasn't there, but boy, you sure feel bad if something happened and you needed it and the pads and the batteries hadn't been inspected. So Kumnopik, you might want to add on your facility checklist to inspect your AEDs once every, I don't know, so many months. And Nathan's nodding his head, so I think you agree, right? Yeah. Melanie, did you have a comment on that too? And then I'll go back to Deanne.
Yeah, same as we just discussed, this for us, the helmets. When I started over here, I realized that our hockey helmets have been sitting in our shelves being expired since quite a few years. And there are some helmets that don't even have like the any expiry date on it, so we are not even sure how old they are, but a lot of these helmets are expired 2020, not even being taken out of the box. So they're brand new. And still we have to exchange them because they are only good for, I think it's 6 or 7 years. Because then it can also be a legal issue if we continue using these helmets and really something happens to the kids using them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. So another thing to check. So that's probably more of a legal issue than the AED, I think. And Nathan, do you guys in Baker Lake have helmets that you share out with the kids too?
Every year, all the kids in Baker Lake get new equipment, new helmets, but they're all donated. Some of them are like secondhand, but they're fairly new. Like a lot of them are like 6 months old. So we're always turning them over, like last year's, and then other communities ask, do you have any equipment that's like 2 or 3 years old or less? And then we give it to them, or we get like, you know what I mean? So it's like passing it on. But yeah, we got like 2,000 or 3,000 kids equipment, like double, triple. We used to have a problem. They were always stolen and then sold for booze or drugs. So, and this was when we had only 100 equipment we were all sharing. So someone said, okay, enough is enough. There's 1,000 people in Baker Lake. We're going to send 2,000. Everyone stop stealing. And then stealing is not an issue anymore. So even though it's $2,000 worth of equipment, we say, it's worth zero since we got it for free. So it's not worth stealing. So it's an idea if you're having issues with all your equipment being stolen, have too much, and then there won't be a problem anymore.
Thanks, Nathan. Go ahead, Melanie. You just have to unmute.
I just have a quick question because we are dealing with this right now because we are putting a hockey schedule together, and I'm a little bit new to this. And maybe you guys have experience about it. And you would love to offer city hockey in our sports arena. This has not been done in the past. And I worry about the legal risk offering this for, like, let's say, teenagers. If this is not for adults, do they have to have supervision? What are the requirements? What they have to wear? Is it just helmets or is there anything else? Like, other protection here that they have to use. I'm not really sure where to look for this, to find this all out, to cover ourselves, that's our liability insurance, and I cannot put it on until I'm clear about the legal risk about it, basically. And maybe someone has an experience, I'm not sure.
So, Melanie, can we hold that question just till the end of the call? And then if anyone has experience doing shinny hockey or like kind of like a drop-in hockey, I guess, for teenagers, maybe you could share some of your experiences. Would that be okay? Okay, great. I just want to make sure I get through all the content that we need to go through, too. So I'm going to come back to explaining a little bit about negligence, and then we're going to look at how it's established. So let me go back to the files here and see if I can get going again. Okay, so As I mentioned, negligence, and as it shows on the screen here, negligence is the failure to exercise a degree of care that's considered reasonable and or to take reasonable steps to prevent damage or injury. So as you can see on this slide, the challenge with that is that the language is what is reasonable. So we use this word reasonable, and what exactly does it mean? It's a really important word, but we're going to dig into how do they figure out what's reasonable. And that's like your question, Melanie, that's Misha's question. So we always ask, what is reasonable in those circumstances? So negligence is almost the opposite of being reasonable, which still doesn't help you understand it anymore. So let's explore for a couple of minutes, I think, first. Let's start with what you think is reasonable or not in your role. So I'm going to tag on the three people who haven't answered a question yet, and I've got a question for you. And it will be Ian, and then Juliana, and then Misha. Let me just pop the question in the chat. And the question of the chat is, what's an example of a behavior that is reasonable in your role? And if you're not sure, sometimes it's easier to describe something that's not reasonable. So, Deanne, while you're thinking, and Juliana and Misha, I'll give you a couple of examples, and the rest of you can pop in the chat if you want to. So, what is not reasonable for an after-school program leader is not paying attention to what's going on. Like somebody who's looking after children, they have to pay attention to what's going on with a whole group of kids all the time. So that's an example of what is reasonable, and you can flip it around to say what's not reasonable. So, Gian, do you have an example of behavior that may be reasonable in your role as the head coach for Squash UConn, just to think about what's reasonable and what's not?
So the couple of examples I would like to put here, as a coach, coach is the job of the authority job, right? You have authority to do the things. And when I say that, it means like a couple of the reasonable things, like you have to take care of the law, whatever we have learned, like the about concussion or rule of two or keeping the information about the athlete, the personal information or the medical information about the athlete. That's the reasonable. We need to really take care of that, right? And whatever your mission and the goals are. Unreasonable is like like the misuse of authority, like you're head coach and you're not listening to the assistant coaches. Or so another example is dating an athlete, right? So there is a rule for that also. You can't do that. Even the athlete is like 25 year old or like he has left the sport. So it's unreasonable to do it dating an athlete, and that can become a legal suit also for you, like when, like later on the athlete will come back to you and then he can file a case against you. Yeah,
so that's great. So that's about sort of your position of authority or leadership in relation to what it is that you're doing. So thanks for those examples. Juliana, do you have any examples that you'd like to share about behavior that's reasonable in your role, or if you would rather flip it around, that's not reasonable?
Maybe I would say one not reasonable. We have different programs, and let's just suppose that we are offering some activities for kids 0 to 6, and we have a ratio of 10 kids for one instructor. And if the instructor allows more kids to be there, it's going to be hard to control and make sure that everything's going to run smoothly. So maybe paying attention to that.
Yeah, so I definitely went back to the five key areas of the responsibility under supervision and instruction. So that's great. Good example. Thank you. Misha, do you have an example of behavior that is reasonable in a recreation role or maybe one that's not?
Yeah. I'll use some personal experience. So when you have volunteer programming, having for a space take on site would be reasonable, as well as supervision throughout the whole time.
That's great. Thank you. So thanks everybody. Those are just some examples. I have a few other ones that I think you can probably come up with them. There are things like, especially ones for staff that you might supervise, things like, you know, being on your phone the whole time when you're supervising or running a program, not doing a head count of children, not recording an injury, you know, those types of things. So those are some of the things that we see as not being reasonable and could potentially be negligent. So I'm just going to have I've got a little bit more information to share with you, and then we'll have one more question, and then we'll come back to the hockey question that Melanie had too. So on slide 14, which is my next one right there, this is sort of the main focus for this week. So how do we, or A is actually the main focus, how is liability established? So there are three main things that the courts have to do to establish liability. So liability simply means responsibility. Let me go back to the last slide and show you that definition. So liability is, oh, where did it go? Right here, this one. So liability is a legal process, and it establishes who's responsible for negligence. So if something goes wrong and it's because somebody did not act reasonably, or something wasn't reasonable, then there potentially could be liability. So I think of negligence, you know, lack of reasonable behavior, and something going wrong, who's responsible, or where do we sign the responsibility? That's this liability piece. So it's not quite as cut and dry as what it might seem. So this week we're going to look a little bit more into that, you know, how do we know if there even was negligence? So the way that the courts do this is they ask four different questions. And so if something happens, they have to ask all four of these questions, and we'll look at each of these. If they answer yes to each one, then there's negligence. If the answer to any of them is no, there is no negligence and the court case is dropped. So hopefully that makes sense. Because a lot of people are worried, oh my gosh, somebody got hurt. I'm going to be liable for that. Well, only if there was negligence and you answered yes in all of the other things. Go ahead, Misha.
So when I was going through these slides, like when I got a concussion, when I went to the hospital, they actually cleared me without doing, and then it was a couple of days later where I had to go back, and then they were like, yeah, you do have a concussion. Would this, like, could I have sued for negligence?
I cannot answer on behalf of the medical community because that is completely different. This is just for us from a recreation perspective, and we all know how challenging it is to get the right medical diagnoses, so there's different,
these kind of four things on the slides before I was, that's kind of what popped into.
I think about lots of different things, and maybe, yeah, you could if you had the right lawyer and lots of money to do it. I think you would also, like, you'll see there has to be sort of this long-term damage or injury as well, and we'll look at some cases that will sort of help explain this to you. So I don't expect you to understand it just from the slides, and that's why this is a four-week-long learning event too. We've got four sort of issues or four questions around duty of care, standard of care, damage or injury, or proximate cause. So let's go to the next slide and look at each of these quickly. And Kumnafik pops in the chat that, you know, a reasonable leader, you're right, lets their staff know that they have to fill out an incident report form. So a good supervisor makes sure that their staff know what they have to do when something goes wrong. Exactly. Thank you. So duty of care here. This slide explains that you owe a duty of care to anyone who comes onto your premises or into your facilities and to anyone who participates in your program. So both. They might not be in your program, but they're coming to visit a friend. They're on your, they're in your facility on your premises. You owe a duty of care to them. So if there ends up being a lawsuit, the question that is asked is, did you owe that person a duty of care? And usually, because we're working in recreation, usually the answer is yes. The judge might also ask you, could you have foreseen or anticipated that this would have happened? And if the answer is yes, like, yeah, I knew the snow was melting off the roof and forming ice on my step. I knew it was icy. I just hadn't gotten to fixing it yet. But somebody coming to see me slipped and broke their leg really badly or a hip. You're probably seen to be negligent in that case because you knew about it and you didn't act on it. So that is a little bit about duty of care, and I'm going to ask you, your RLA for this week is about duty of care and standard of care. So on the next slide, we look at standard of care. So this one is the key part to any type of liability court case involving negligence. So what the courts try and do is they try and draw a line to represent what they determine is an acceptable standard of care. Behavior below the line is negligence, and behavior above the line is acceptable and not negligence. So they ask questions like, did the behavior, like your behavior, fall below that minimum accepted standard, and were your facilities and equipment maintained? So courts look for best practices, and to determine this acceptable standard of care, they use three different things that you can see here. So case law means the history of what happened in other cases. So there's lots of hockey cases out there. So if you go to the Explore More section, you can find hockey on the Canadian Legal Information Institute website. And it's actually quite interesting to read what people actually put lawsuits out for and how they get resolved. They also use published standards, and aquatics is one example of that, or also like the minimum standards for first aid. So if you have X number of people, you need this many trained first aiders. They'll also use industry practices. So that looks at what other people are doing, because sometimes it's not written down. And practices change. During COVID, we changed a lot of what we did. That was industry practice. There was no lawsuits or published standards around that. So we had to adapt as we went along. So what I want you to understand, and this is why this is important for us in the North, the courts don't compare apples and oranges. In other words, they're not going to compare your small community of Ahuwilik or Baker Lake with the city of Toronto. Okay, they're not going to say that they did this in Toronto, so you should have done it in Toledo, because it doesn't work that way. They understand that there's too many differences. So what it does mean for you, though, is that you want to use guidelines that are from communities that are similar to yours. So Melanie's question about who has any experience with shinny hockey, awesome question, because she wants to use guidelines from communities that are similar, communities across the North delivering similar programs of similar sizes. Guidelines from Vancouver won't work in Watson Lake. So that's a really good question. So that's important to understand, and that's why it's important that we actually share when we have these things. So courts also need to understand, so I got two more slides and then we'll wrap up. So they also need to understand the damages that were suffered. And I'd like you to remember that a damage is not just a physical injury. A damage can be really obvious, like a broken neck, a little less obvious, like a concussion, but sometimes it's things like psychological damage. And I think Deanne was alluding to that as well and hit what you shared about what's reasonable and what's not. So there has to be, if there's no evidence of damage or injury, there's no court case. And then on the last one, it's proximate cause. So what that means is it means direct. So there has to be a direct link. I have my fishing rod, I put a bait on my fishing rod, I throw it into the water, I catch a fish. Direct relationship to you. Okay, so the plaintiff's lawyer will try and show that the damage that was caused, maybe a broken neck or psychological damage, or vandalism is another one, things like that, was a direct result of either the person's actions or their lack of action. So I've provided more information on these four things in activity one. So by all means, take the time to go through it. Take the time to go through the glossary that we have as well, so that you understand words like negligence, liability, duty of care, standard of care, damage, and proximate cause. So I'm going to end our call because I see I'm 1 minute or 2 minutes now after the hour. But I'd like to invite you guys to stay on if you'd like to. If you have any questions for me, because that was a fairly, I do find this is fairly fast that we go through. If you have any questions, and also if you have anything to share with Melanie. And you do have a required learning activity that's due on Sunday, the Showing We Care. If you have any questions about that, by all means, let me know. So I'm going to stop the recording. I'd like to say thank you very much. If you have to hang up, by all means do so. If you're able to hang on, I would like to maybe take a few minutes to address Melanie's question and any other questions. And then Nathan and Humanoptic, if you guys have time, I'd just like to chat with you about your last one from RM102. So I'll take about 10 minutes for hockey. So Nathan and Humanoptic, I'm pretty sure you guys run hockey programs as well. So feel free to hang up if you need to, and we do have a call next week as well. But if you're going to stay on, let's go to Melanie.